Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening.
I've been now president for over 7 years, and gun sales don't seem to have suffered during that time.
If anything, actually, you've helped.
They've gone up. I've been very good for gun manufacturers.
There it is right there. The grim irony and apparent contradiction of the Obama legacy on gun control. Lots of passion about excessive access to guns and rising sales of firearms at the same time.
There's nothing else in our lives that we purchase where we don't try to make it a little safer if we can. Traffic fatalities have gone down drastically during my lifetime. And part of it is technology, and part of it is that the National Highway Safety Administration does research, and they figure out, you know what, seatbelts really work. And then we pass some laws to make sure seatbelts are fastened.
The president was at the center of a CNN Anderson Cooper town hall meeting last night at George Mason University. He called out the NRA for not attending, although representatives of gun retailers did attend. And let's listen now to the town hall meeting still going on among our listeners.
My name is John Oxford in Oklahoma City. I own a firearm because there are people that are criminals that would use firearms to harm others, and I want to be able to protect myself in the same manner, to meet fire with fire.
Hi, I'm Jason. I'm from Maine. And up here, law enforcement response times are sometimes in excess of half an hour, sometimes as much as an hour. So going off of that, I'm my own first responder.
The best armed civilian population in the world has more guns than people, but does that make us lucky in this country? Rape victim Kimberly Corbin did not feel lucky last night at the town hall meeting at George Mason.
Why can't your administration see that these restrictions that you're putting to make it harder for me to own a gun or harder for me to take that where I need to be is actually just making my kids and I less safe?
Let's turn now to Bishop Douglas Miles, a pastor at Koinonia Baptist Church and co-chair emeritus of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. He was in attendance at the town hall last night. Welcome back to the show, Pastor. And what was it like there in the town hall last night?
It was a great experience. Tense times at moments, and the aftermath was almost chaos in the studio.
Because chaos, why?
Opponents and proponents going at each other.
Now, do you think that's a good thing? Is that a good thing, or is that a sign of gridlock and divisiveness?
Some gridlock and divisiveness, but in some instances we were able to find common ground, especially the Do Not Stand Idly By campaign, which I'm a part of, has found common ground with the National Retailers Association of Gun Dealers and have agreed to look at ways that we can work together around this whole issue.
What do you think the likelihood is of talk becoming action from last night's events?
I think we're on to something, especially in looking at the role that gun distributors can play in this whole violence epidemic that we're facing, and also pointing a finger at the gun manufacturers and what they're not doing and could do to help stem some of the violence in this nation.
Now, what can the manufacturers do? I mean, guns are supposed to shoot, and therefore, you know, anything that makes them not shoot would make them not worth anything.
There are two areas that the gun manufacturers can be instrumental. One, in moving ahead in smart gun technology, which produces guns that can only be fired by the person who owns the gun. Secondly, in terms of producing smart locks that can be used on virtually any guns, and those instruments are available now, so that children can't accidentally shoot themselves. People who steal guns would not be able to use those guns if they were appropriately locked. And thirdly, the gun manufacturers can play a significant role in identifying the 1% of bad dealers who are selling up to 60% of the guns that are found at the scenes of homicides and suicides.
What do you think of his answer to this woman who was raped and who believes that, you know, the things that he's doing, that the president is actually doing, Kimberly Corbin believes make her less safe?
And that's what I mean by the emotion attached to it. Nothing the president has suggested would in any way take away her right to own a gun, her right to have that gun in her home to protect herself and her family. Nothing that he has proposed even hints at restricting law-abiding citizens from being able to possess and weapons.
Now, the cynical viewer here would say, you know, we're a big country, upwards of 300 million people. I mean, this is a sideshow of a sideshow of a sideshow in terms of where Americans mostly stand in terms of taking action here. That's got to feel like an uphill battle.
I really think the converse is true, and the media, I don't think, is doing an adequate job in putting responsibility where it needs to go. There's a silent majority in the NRA that needs to start speaking up so that the NRA leadership is put in check and blocking Congress from doing what needs to be done to strengthen background check laws and moving in other directions. No right-minded, law-abiding citizen wants to reduce background checks that enable criminals to possess weapons. So that's one area that needs to happen. That silent majority, I hate to use Nixon's term, but that silent majority of NAR members needs to start speaking up to its leadership saying, back off. This is something that needs to happen in this nation.
Bishop Douglas Miles is a pastor at Koinonia Baptist Church and co-chair emeritus of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, in attendance at the town hall meeting on Thursday night. And what's the name of your organization focused specifically on this issue?
It's Metro IAF Do Not Stand Idly By campaign.
Thank you so much, Bishop.
Thank you.
And now let's hear a little more from the hundreds of people who reached out to us over the past 24 hours to find common ground and express their own feelings. Here's one of them. Erin Wood, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Now tell me a little bit about you.
I'm 36. I'm Caucasian. I'm a single mother. I own my own home. I live in a small town between Charlotte and Greensboro, North Carolina. I was raised in a home in rural Virginia where we maintained a 22 rifle for the sole purposes of managing farm life. So it was never intended to be used against another human. And that home was very much anti-gun. The thought was, why in the world would we do this? People who maintain guns really don't have a strong sense of what it means to be in the one human family. Several years ago, my biological father died, and he left two guns, one my other sister took and one I took. And so that's how I came to be an owner of my current firearm. And I also, prior to that time, a couple years prior to that time, the father of my son is a proponent of gun ownership, responsible gun ownership, if I need to use that clarifier. And when we began to live together and started talking about the role of guns in our home, knowing that we were going to have a child, I had many, many discussions with him about what sorts of guns would be there and why would they be there. And so we settled on having the single firearm in the home that he felt most comfortable with because he wanted to be able to defend our home. Since that time, we are no longer together and we live in separate homes. And so when I got my gun from my father, it felt to me like it would be appropriate for my home to also have a firearm to defend ourselves should we need it. And yet at the same time, I had a great dissonance because I felt like I shouldn't have something with that much deadly capability if I didn't know how to use it well. In fact, I will be attending a day-long concealed carry permit class with a certification process at the end at the range with that particular gun. But I will also be taking with me a semi-automatic pistol.
All right. So your self-examination led you to actually increase your connection to a firearm and actually go about getting a conceal and carry permit. Now, what do you make of the president's suggestions that there need to be safety mechanisms on guns, that gun manufacturers need to be potentially liable for mass shootings, and some of the kinds of changes that were talked about last night?
I cannot imagine why we would not want to use available technology to increase the safety of firearms. But I think that's not the same thing as thinking that those sorts of technologies will be mandatory on all firearms. I think there might be a feeling among some people that there won't be sort of what I would presume to be a grandfather space where people who have guns will then all of a sudden have to return to their gun shop and get these biometric whatever sort of technologies on them. And I understand why people would be worried about that.
Well, you're very thoughtful about this. Do you think the NRA has overreached in its political agenda? And would you think of yourself as, you know, a member of the silent majority that really wants a more responsible message coming from groups like the NRA?
I have not been on the NRA's website. I have not read their white papers or their mission statements. I'm not sure that I have to, because their position, so far as I can tell, is to maximize access to firearms. And that's problematic to me. If the NRA were to say, we want our membership to be comprised of responsible gun owners, and then define responsible as people who are intentional about their relationship to firearms, then they would lose a lot of their membership.
Hmm.
One of the issues is if we define a responsible gun owner, if the definition of that individual is somebody who, say, has gone through a certification process, whether that be a concealed carry process or some other course, the concealed carry course here in North Carolina is 8 hours of in-class time plus a couple hours on the gun range with a level of proficiency and performance in shooting. If an individual walks away from that and determines themselves an expert, then we have a problem. That's not expert level. But many people do walk away and feel like, oh, because I've been certified, therefore I am responsible. And yet, I teach psychology, I teach behavior modification. We are so prone to overconfidence when we know very little. It is only when we dig deeper and deeper do we understand what we don't know, do we understand the limitations on our capabilities. And when it comes to fine motor coordination and the skill that it takes to properly handle a firearm, that takes many, many hours of intentional practice.
Well, Aaron, we'll see where it comes out. I mean, I think the remarkable takeaway here from this conversation is, okay, the president may jar people into thinking more responsibly and deeply about what they should do regarding gun violence and their connection to firearms. But the outcome of that journey may have some surprises. I think it's a fascinating journey. And Aaron, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be on your show.
Aaron Wood is a 36-year-old mom and gun owner and assistant professor of psychology at a college in Salisbury, North Carolina.